So we invoke the presence of these seven holy rivers by this mantra. Even though the waters may not be physically present in front of us, but when we touch the water that is in front of us and chant this mantra and meditate on these seven holy rivers, then it is understood that transcendentally they become present. They enter into that water. So we've been talking about Godavari yesterday. And we were almost through. You will remember that we mentioned that the origin of the Godavari River is at Brahmagiri Mountain, near Trimbakeshwar, near the modern-day city of Nasik. And we also saw that the Godavari is considered completely identical to Ganga. We also heard about the origin of the Ganga, of the Godavari, and how she appeared there by the grace of Lord Shiva, who dashed his matted locks of hair, which contained the Ganga, and then Ganga appeared there as well. And because it was through the agency of sage Gautam, so she is also called the Gautami Ganga. And as she flows down from there, she enters into the plains. We saw at Nasik, there is the Panchavati, the place where Lord Ram and Lakshman and Sita Devi resided for several years, and specifically the place Tapovan, which was a place where sages did austerities. You see, for those of you who are interested in environmentalism, in Vedic literature and culture we find there were gradations of everything according to purpose. So even the forests were divided. Even till today, if you go into some villages, for example in Orissa, you will find there are some ponds, some lakes in the village that are divided according to purpose. One is only for bathing, the other is for cleaning your vessels and other things, the other is for the temple. And nobody will take water from the temple for bathing, from that pond meant for the temple, for any other purpose. So there was such a high degree of culture that they knew what should be used where. And they may have been very poor. They may have been even illiterate perhaps. But spiritually they were very cultured and intelligent. What is the use of being materially very intelligent and having all sorts of university degrees and we do not understand what is holy and what is not holy? We don't understand and have faith in simple things like the existence of the soul, the existence of God, the existence of a transcendental world. So the spiritual culture was very advanced, even though some of the people may not have been so advanced from a material point of view. So similarly, the forests have also been divided into various categories according to use. So there were certain forests meant for the sages to perform austerity. So they were called Tapovan. So there were other kinds of forests that were meant for other purposes, something where the Kshatriyas could hunt and so on. So Tapovan, Tapa means austerity. Van means forest. So historically many, many sages came here to perform penance in this place. And Lord Ram also came here. Lakshman also performed his meditation here to get the strength to kill Indrajit, the son of Ravana, Meghnad. And we heard yesterday that during the Kumbh Mela, which takes place here at Nasik, at Panchavati, many, many sadhus come and live here at Panchavati. It has very strong spiritual vibrations. And anyone who goes there will will feel inclined to do some spiritual activities. We also saw that this was the Kapil Tirtha. The confluence of the Kapila and Godavari rivers at Tapovan. This is the place also where Kapila Dev instructed Mother Devahuti. All of you have heard of this pastime from the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We also saw yesterday about these different small kunds, and especially the Agnitirth Kund, where the original Sita was supposed to have lived for some time, and the Maya Sita, the shadow Sita, was the one kidnapped by Ravana. Parna Kuti. Parna means the leaf. So Lord Ram resided there in this region in a hut that was fashioned or made by Lakshman with logs of wood. And you see, Ram and Lakshman, they were very expert, even though they lived in the city, but they knew every single tree. And in the Ramayana also it's explained by Valmiki Muni that as Ram entered into the forest with Sita Devi, he would point out the various trees and the various flowers. So obviously he knew them. Lakshman also knew the art of making houses, cutting wood, even though he was a prince living in the forest, in the city. So he built a cottage for Ram and Sita here at this place, at Panchavati, at Tapovan. And this is also the place, as we saw yesterday, where Sita Devi was kidnapped by Ravana, the place where Shurpanakha's nose was cut off by Lakshman, and also the place where Ram single-handedly killed the 14,000 Rakshasas, the place called Janasthan. This is that Sita Gufa where Lord Ram instructed Lakshman to protect Sita while he was fighting with the Rakshasas. Then as the Godavari proceeds, she flows along. She comes through the state of Maharashtra, and she flows into the state of Andhra Pradesh and Odisha. Then there are some beautiful waterfalls there called the Duduma waterfalls. She moves on into Andhra Pradesh and comes to the famous place called the Bhadrachalam. Those of you who attended the lectures on Ram Leela at the time of Ram Navami, you might remember this name, Bhadrachalam. What does this Bhadrachalam name remind you of? Who does it remind you of? Anyone who attended those lectures? Of a great devotee called Ram Das, and who diverted some money from the taxes that was supposed to go to the king into constructing a grand temple for Lord Ram and creating all sorts of beautiful clothes and ornaments for the lordships. And finally, the Sultan, who was a Muslim king, he discovered that and he put him in jail and he tortured him like anything. And eventually, heeding the prayers and seeing the pitiable condition of Ram Das, and just the night before he was to be executed, Ram and Lakshman appeared in the bedroom of the Nawab and they paid him all the gold coins and much more. And Ram Das was of course very grateful, but he composed many beautiful poems. In one of the poems, when he was still in prison, he started rebuking Lord Ram. Of course he can do that because of the intense love. Ordinary people can't go and rebuke the Lord. That would be considered a big offense. But in intense devotion, such things do happen with exalted devotees. So we can't imitate such things. So Ram Das wrote poems in which he scolded the Lord. And he said, I've done so much for you. I diverted this money, which is ultimately your money. It doesn't belong to the Nawab or to any human being. It's your money. I diverted this money for building a temple for you and for getting nice clothes and ornaments for you. And look what you have done to me. put me in jail and got me tortured. So where did this nice gold belt come from? Did your father, Dashrath Maharaj, give it to you? No, I gave it to you. And look at the nice silk clothing and all the other nice ornaments that you and Sita Devi are wearing. Did it come in dowry from Maharaj Janak? No, I gave it to you. So he went on speaking like that. And then he said, look, after doing all this, this is what you do for me. You put me in the jail and get me tortured. So finally it hit home. So Lord Ram appeared and discharged that debt. And when he was released, then Ramdas wrote another poem in which he said, look, you put me in jail for all these years. And then instead of making up and coming to me and saying, I'm sorry, I did this to you, you go and give darshan to the Muslim king instead of coming to me. So this is a very famous pastime, a very famous temple. And a large number of pilgrims go there. It's on the bank of the Godavari. And there are many other pastimes associated with this, but we have already discussed that in the Ramlila. So here's another view of that famous Bhadrachalam temple. There was a sage called Bhadra who took the form of a mountain. Achala means mountain. And you can see the Godavari in the background there. Vedavyas cave. As the Godavari flows along, there is a cave where the local people say Vyasadev meditated. It's possible, although Vyasadev's cave is way up in the Himalayas in Badrikashram, but he could have arguably performed penance in so many places. So this is the deity of Vyasadev inside that cave that's on the banks of the Godavari. Near Vidyanagar, this is a view of the Godavari there. Sunset view of the Godavari River and bridge from the Rajahmundry. Rajahmundry is one of the probably the third or fourth largest towns in Andhra Pradesh now. It's called the cultural capital of Andhra Pradesh. This was where the Telugu language originated. It was originally called Rajamahendravaram and then somehow got corrupted to Rajahmundry. And that's right on the banks of the Godavari. And the ISKCON temple is also exactly bang on the banks, and they have some ghats that go down to the Godavari. So last year, I had the good fortune of visiting this place. We went in a yatra, and all of us went down and had bath in the Godavari right down from the temple, the ISKCON temple there. And also, everyone went for a boat ride in the Godavari over there. And across the Godavari from where Rajahmundry city is also another place. So this is Pushkar Ghat at Godavari. And is that the temple behind ISKCON? I'm not sure. It could possibly be the ISKCON temple building behind. I'm not sure about it. And across the river from where Rajahmundry is, in a place called Kovur, we talked about it when we were discussing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, travels through South India. So therefore we won't talk about it in detail now. So this was the place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had discussions with Ramananda Rai, and he revealed his form as a combined form of Radha and Krishna. So these deities are there. And there is a big Gaudiya Math there on the other side of the Godavari. This is a spot where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sri Ramananda Rai met in 1512 when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited Godavari Ghat. Further ahead is Antarvedi. There's a very famous temple of Lakshmi Narasimha there. There are many, many such places on the banks of the Godavari. And here's a beautiful view of the sunrise on Godavari at Gautami Ganga. And at Kovur, which is the place, the other side of Rajahmundry, where Mahaprabhu met Ramananda Rai, They speak about the pastime of Gautama and the cow, which I discussed yesterday, as having happened there. There is some confusion. But what is clear is that sage Gautama was given the Brahmagiri to stay by Lord Shiva. So it appears that that would be the right place. But then there are some people who claim that this is the place. So anyway, people will always like to say that their place is more significant. So, and then the Godavari joins the Bay of Bengal. Actually, the Godavari spreads into two distributaries. Again, coming back to our basic geography, you know the difference between a tributary and a distributary, right? What is a tributary? Which joins the main river. And what is a distributary? Which branches out from the river. So till the mouth of the river, you will find many tributaries joining a river. And when the tributary comes to, when the river comes to the mouth, which means where it meets the sea, then it branches out, it starts branching out. And those are called distributaries, like the Ganga. So many distributaries. And then it forms a delta over there, the silt and the sediment that has been brought from the upper regions, because the speed of the river is very slow, so it deposits there and forms a delta. So the Godavari at the basin, at the delta, it forms two distributaries called Gautami Godavari and Vasishta Godavari. And each of these two again branch into two each. So these four branches of the Godavari eventually move into the Bay of Bengal, the meet the sea. So this is the Godavari River. So this is the delta region of the Godavari River. There's a certain charm, isn't it, when you look at water. Unless you're in the midst of a storm or a typhoon. The goddess Godavari at the Godavari Delta, her deity there. Now we'll talk about River Saraswati. Pardon me, I'm going a little fast because we had 4 days to cover many, many rivers. And I thought at least I should try to cover 6 or 7 of the main ones. So we've done Ganga, we've talked about Yamuna, we've talked about Godavari, and in the same order in that mantra, Gangecha Yamunechaiva Godavari Saraswati. So now we come to River Saraswati. Saraswati is amongst the most often mentioned river in the Vedas, the original Vedas like the Rig Veda, and even in the other Vedic scriptures, including the Puranas and the Mahabharata and the Ramayana and so on. And it also happens to be one of the most mysterious rivers of all the sacred rivers, because we don't see it. We don't see her, rather, so much, except at a very small point. So there is a lot of contention and debate about her identity, about where she flows, which water is the Saraswati now, and which is the riverbed that was formerly the Saraswati. A lot of debate going on amongst scholars. The word Saraswati is composed of two words, Saras and Vati. Saras refers to a lake, or basically any body of water. So it could also mean water. Vati or Vata, if it's male, it means full of. So Saraswati means full of lakes or full of water. In other words, she had an enormous quantity of water. So a river, any river that has a huge quantity of water can be called Saraswati. But then they also, certain specific rivers are also given that name, Saraswati. Just like we talked about the Ganga, the one who flows very swiftly. So many rivers flow swiftly. In that sense, you could call so many rivers as Ganga. But a specific river has been called Ganga. Similarly, a specific river has been called Saraswati. And she flows down. And as per the scriptures, she is a goddess, like all these major sacred rivers are. And as we've discussed in the previous days, that everything is personified in Vedic understanding. Nothing is impersonal. there are deities who predominate various areas like hills and forests and rivers and planets and the, so and so on and so forth. So Goddess Saraswati in her is the consort of Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe. She also has her origin in the spiritual world, in the Vaikuntha world, in Goloka Vrindavan. She is there in her original form. Time does not permit us to go into the deep ontology of the origin of Saraswati goddess. But she is popularly known in the form in which she appears in the material world as the goddess of learning, the goddess of education, and the goddess of music as well. She is seen playing the veena, which is an instrument. She plays many critical roles in the Lord's pastimes as well. And therefore in India, now that habit or that practice has diminished very significantly. But in most schools, children would begin the day by chanting prayers to Saraswati, the goddess of learning. And nowadays, because of this idea of secularism coming up, unfortunately, they have stopped it in so many schools. Even in the government-run schools, these prayers used to be chanted. But no more now. So Goddess Saraswati is the one who has appeared as the river also. Many times goddesses appear as rivers. So she flows. You can see the flow. You can see the flow as she comes from here, from the Himalayas, and she flows down here and goes into the via Gujarat. Kutch, she meets, goes into the sea. Dwarka is somewhere here, nearby. And so the Saraswati was flowing like this before, but now we don't find this section, river at all. We don't find this. Only here at some point near Badrinath, we find a little bit of the river. And mysteriously, she also has appeared here at the confluence of the Ganga and the Yamuna, here, at the Sangam. How she appeared here is also something very mystical, which we don't know. So that is where the Saraswati has appeared. And now there has been a lot of interest, actually since the last 100 years, to identify this lost Saraswati River. The Saraswati River was flowing from the Himalayas. It probably starts from somewhere in the Manasarovar or somewhere in Tibet, you know, that region. It starts and then comes into Badrinath and then flows down. Now, it happened so that in 1893, another English engineer was riding on horseback in a dry river bed that was called, that is today called the Ghaggar Hakra Confluence River. And at certain points he saw that this river bed was extremely wide. And at some points it was as wide as 8 kilometers. The Ganga also is several kilometers wide at certain points. And here was this river that was gigantic, it must have been. So he figured, he reasoned, that at some point in time, this river must have been really wide, 8 kilometers wide. So she must have been full of water. So Saraswati is very apt, meaning full of water. So he started investigating, and since then there have been many research studies carried on, and even now, since modern technology has come in, they've tried to do some satellite imagery. And such imagery shows that there is a riverbed that could have been that Saraswati, which they estimate dried up about 4,000 years ago. Or maybe a little longer. Certainly the Saraswati River was there at the time of Lord Krishna, at the time of the Mahabharata, which happened approximately 5,000 years ago. So maybe 1,000 years after that, gradually it started drying up. And the course of the river, as shown by the satellite imagery, roughly corresponds to the Ghaggar Hakra River. And the Mahabharata also says that this Saraswati is drying up. And because it dried up, the whole area became a desert. You know, that part of India in the state of Rajasthan is now desert, the famous Thar desert there. So it appears that the Saraswati river was flowing through that area. It wasn't a desert in those days. But as the river dried, then everything else dried up. So see, the surface of the globe has undergone and continues to undergo enormous changes as the years go by. So therefore, if you look for evidence of what is mentioned in the scriptures purely in terms of archaeology and paleontology and all these modern scientific disciplines, and you look for empirical evidence, it's not going to be there very often, because the surface of the earth changes rapidly, and over the thousands and what to speak of millions of years, there is so much of change that happens. So we have to rely on the evidence of the scriptures, which are the really reliable sources of evidence. So nowadays, there has been renewed effort, and the government of India especially has been, over the last 20 years or so, been trying a lot to revive it. They have found something, looking for water underneath the desert. And they hope that if there indeed there is water there, then they can solve the water problem in the desert. And also that they can hopefully connect that somehow to the Saraswati River. But there are other scholars, you know, who are mostly of a leftist persuasion, who see some ideological motives there. And therefore, they say even if there is water, how would we know it's Saraswati? Anyway, the debate goes on. But as far as we are concerned, we see from the point of view of the scriptures. And we accept that there indeed was a river, and that river went and met what is today the Arabian Sea at this point roughly in Gujarat. So the only physically flowing river that is visible is at Badrinath. There is evidence in the Rig Veda about the location of the Saraswati River. And the locals say that the river actually can be seen for a brief while in Badrinath in the Himalayas. You remember from the map that we discussed yesterday and day before yesterday, we had the four dhams. We had Yamunotri, we had Kedarnath, we had Gangotri, and then Badrinath. So Badrinath was the easternmost of the four dhams. So that is where the Saraswati River appears. And she later goes on to join the Alaknanda at Keshav Prayag. You remember from our discussion of the Ganga that you had the Bhagirathi River and the Alaknanda. And they meet at Deva Prayag and then form the Ganga. So the Saraswati from Badrinath, she flows and joins the Alaknanda River at Keshav Prayag. So here is a picture of the Saraswati River flowing in Badrinath. This is the cave of Vyas. I have a 3-minute video on how Saraswati flows there, but I'm only concerned that we have several other rivers to talk about and show you, but maybe we can do it. Is Saurabh here? Okay. Okay, we'll see. So anyway, just the pictures. So this is the river Saraswati flowing at Badrinath. And just above Badrinath is a place called Mana. It's a village called Mana. It's the last village on the Indian border. And then after that, there is China. I've been to these places a couple of times. And it is said that this is Vyasadeva's cave. And this is Ganesha's cave, some 50 feet away. And this is where Vyasadeva dictated the Mahabharata to Ganesh. This is the very famous pastime. I'm sure you've remember that. He wanted to compile the Mahabharata and put it down in written form, but who could be the scribe? The only qualified person to be the perfect secretary, the first secretary in history, was Ganesh. Because, you know, you have to be very intelligent and capable to be a good secretary. You have to be able to write at a very good speed, and you have to understand everything. So Ganesh agreed, but he had a mischievous twinkle in his eye, and he said, I will indeed agree to write down what you speak, provided you do not stop your speaking. If you stop speaking, I'll stop writing. Period. So Vyasadeva considered the matter. He said, this Ganesh is really clever. But Vyasadeva is even more clever. So he said, all right, I agree to your condition, but I also have my condition, that you should not write down anything till you have actually understood what I have spoken. So when Vyasadeva wanted some time to think of what he wanted to speak, he would, to use modern cricket terminology, spin a googly. He would give a tough verse, and then Ganesh would be scratching his head to figure out the meaning. Meanwhile, Vyasadeva got some breathing space to compose the verses ahead. And in this way, by the cooperative effort of Vyasadeva and Ganesh, the Mahabharata was compiled. So this is a spot, we had gone to this spot also. This is a spot from where you can see the Saraswati coming in. And you can see the stone there that bridges the river. It is said that is Bhimpool. It is said to have been lifted by Bhima and then put across the Saraswati. Now you all know that the Pandavas retired into the forest when they heard that Lord Krishna had also departed from this world and returned to the spiritual world. So they placed their grand nephew Parikshit Maharaj on the throne, and they moved on. Parikshit's father was Abhimanyu, Abhimanyu's father was Arjuna. So the Pandavas left, and Parikshit was on the throne of Hastinapur, the emperor of the world, and they moved on into the Himalayas, the five brothers with Draupadi. Kunti had already left some years earlier, along with Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. So as they were walking and walking and walking, they reached the Himalayas. They came to this point, Badrinath, and they walked up higher and higher and higher. They came to this place of Vyasa's Gufa, that place, and they wanted to cross. So it is said then Bhima put this stone across. Only he could have put such a huge stone. Cat lifted it and put it across and made a bridge. It is called the Bridge of Bhima. And they crossed over and they climbed further higher. And at a certain point, Draupadi fell down because she couldn't walk anymore. And then Nakul fell down, Sahadev fell down, Arjuna fell down. And then finally Bhima fell down. And Yudhishthir Maharaj was just walking ahead. Didn't even look back. And it's a long pastime. We don't have the time to talk about it. And Yudhishthir Maharaj kept explaining what the reason was for that individual to have fallen down. They had certain faults. You know, like Draupadi was partial to Arjuna, although she was the husband of all the five brothers. Nakul and Sahadev, they were proud of their learning and their beauty. And Arjuna's fault was that he took vows very easily out of pride. Bhima's fault was that he ate too much. You know, like that. So as Bhima fell down, he was the last. He fell and said, Yudhishthir, what was my fault, you tell me? You ate too much. And then Yudhishthir went along, and Yamaraj came in the form of a dog. And you know that whole pastime that happened. So there is the temple where Draupadi fell down. We were able to go up to that point. You can't go beyond that. And some kilometers into the mountains and the forests is the border with China, Tibet. And also because of security reasons that you're not allowed to go anywhere beyond that. And it's not even possible to go. Maybe some sages go and live there. So then the Saraswati River flows here. The Pandavas had come here. And it is said that in the Bhagavatam, actually, it is explained. So this is the place where the Saraswati river comes out. India's last village, Mana. So from the Badrinath proper, you have to climb up. And then you come to that Mana river. Yeah. So here, interestingly, why is the Saraswati not visible elsewhere? Why is she visible only for this short distance at Mana, near Badrinath, and then onwards to Keshav Prayag? Well, there is a Puranic incident which says that when Saraswati, the pastime that happened, where Saraswati descended from the spiritual world into the material world, there was a condition that she would flow as a river only till such time as sages continued to perform penance on her banks. And in Kali Yuga, because there are hardly any sages and hardly any river banks left, only money banks now, and no more sages performing penances on her banks, so she has practically disappeared. And indeed, that's mentioned in various scriptures, that as the years go by in Kali Yuga, most of the holy places, including the sacred rivers like Ganga, are going to start disappearing. They're going to start diminishing. And they will become unmanifest. They will become invisible to ordinary eyes. So Saraswati is still there, but not visible to us, to our ordinary eyes. More and more places have become inaccessible to human beings as Kali Yuga goes on. We see that even in Dwapar Yuga, there were certain places that were not accessible. When Bhima wanted to go to get the Saugandhika flower for Draupadi, he was stopped at a certain point. And also we know from the Yaksha pastime, Yaksha and Yudhishthira had so many questions, answers and so on. So they were prevented from going up because there were the regions that were inhabited only by certain higher powers than human beings. So beyond a certain point, you're not allowed to go. So that access point is going to get further and further diminished, and we will not be able to access these portions. You remember when speaking about Badrinath, I spoke about Joshimath and the deity of Lord Narasimhadev there, that he is resting on his arm, and the arm is very slim, and it's getting slimmer and slimmer, and when it cracks, then the mountains will fall up there, it will collapse, and access to Badrinath will cease for the rest of Kali Yuga. So that is slowly what's going to happen. So more and more important that we preserve these places at least for whatever number of years that they will live, so that these generations that will come, all of us can take benefit from these holy places. It is also said in the Skanda Puran that the Saraswati river originated from the water pot of Brahma, and she came from the Himalayas, from Plaksha. The Plaksha is actually a peepal tree. So at some point in the Himalayas she has originated. We don't know exactly from where. Now the place where Vyasadeva's ashram was, that's mentioned in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is said that Vyasadeva performed his meditation and austerities at a place called Shamyaprasa. And that is where he meditated and he lived. Now, in the Bhagavatam, it is said that this is on the western bank of the Saraswati. But the Vyasadeva's cave that we find here, this is on the eastern bank of the Saraswati. Now, this is a mystery. So the only explanation is that the original cave of Vyasadeva, which is in Uttar Badri, is not visible to us. It is not accessible to us. So what is accessible is probably the expansion of it. Similarly, the real Saraswati probably not visible, the expansion of something visible to us. So anyway, so the Saraswati continues to flow down, from Badrinath, and she reaches the confluence with the Yamuna and Ganga. And invisibly she meets there. And Saraswati can be perceived only through the mouths of the sages who speak about her at the Triveni Sangam at Prayag. You can see the two rivers, the difference in the color. So it was on the banks of the Saraswati that Krishna sat down after the Yadus got into a fratricidal battle. Again, the disappearance pastime of Lord Krishna is something that's described elaborately in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam and briefly in the first canto. So he got the Yadus, members of the Yadu dynasty, to quarrel amongst each other at a place called Prabhas Kshetra. And then, by his arrangement, the Yadu dynasties were to depart from this world before his departure. So when that happened, then he went to the banks of the Saraswati and sat down. That is where Uddhava came to him. He gave the parting instructions to Uddhava. Then Uddhava Gita happened. And then he moved on to Badrikashram. So the Saraswati River was flowing along all the way from Badrikashram to this place on the banks called Narayana Saras. So Uddhava got the Uddhava Gita here on the banks of the Saraswati, and then he went up all the way to Badrikashram. And that was where, on the way at Vrindavan, he met Vidura. And the famous dialogue between Vidura and Uddhava happened there in Vraj area. And this is also where Lord Krishna met Maitreya. And you can see Maitreya in the background there. It is also the place, the bank of the Saraswati, where Kardama Muni performed austerities, as mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It was also the place where Prithu Maharaj performed his sacrifices. Parshuram also performed austerities on the bank of the Saraswati River. Lord Balaram also visited Saraswati when he was on pilgrimage. And the famous discussion amongst all the sages, when they wanted to determine who amongst Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva was supreme, happened here, and then Bhrigu was chosen and he was sent to investigate and come back with a report. And Bhrigu's conclusion was that Vishnu is supreme. So that whole assembly happened at the bank of the Saraswati River. And before we see the video, I have an interesting tidbit of information. So, Saraswati, there's a connection with Persia and Croatia. Anyone from Croatia here? I read this in an article in Dandavats written by one devotee. So this information I'm giving you from that article. The Croatians call themselves as Hrivati. Hrivati. Yes, you're from Slovenia, Lindraj. Yes, isn't that so? So the Croatians are very close to Slovenia. So they call themselves Hrivati. Now Hrivati has its roots in Persian, in the Persian language, from Persia or what is modern day Iran. So Hrivati can be traced back to the Persian Haraivati, which is actually a corrupted form of Saraswati. Okay? And the Persians, somehow in their language, they substitute the S for the H. For example, in Sanskrit it's Swaha, referring to the sun, they call it Hwaha. Or the Sapta Sindhu, they call it Hapta Hindu. So the river in Hindi or in Sanskrit, Saptaha, 7 days a week, they call it Hapta. So in India today it's called Hapta because the S is omitted, is silent. Similarly, the river Sindhu, Indus River, they called it Hindu That's how the word Hindu originated. We'll talk about that when we come to the river Sindhu. So therefore, the rivers in Iran, Haraivati and Harayu, are Saraswati and Sarayu. So you have the equivalent there. Sarayu, of course, is near Ayodhya, but the names have come from there. So anyway, that was just a brief, interesting tidbit of information. So now we'll have a little video about Saraswati flowing in Badrinath. It's 3.5 minutes roughly. Just for the benefit of those of you who haven't gone there and probably will not go there, at least you can have darshan of Saraswati and fold your hands. Saraswati! Saraswati! Hey Saraswati! Yeah, so you can see her flowing down. This is probably Keshav Prayag, where the confluence of the Alakananda with the Saraswati. So you can see that actually from a distance once you go on top over there. So this was Saraswati. And now we'll talk about River Narmada. Hey Narmade! Narmada, Narmada. Okay. So we'll start Narmada. So Narmada is the fifth largest river in India. And the third largest amongst the rivers that flow only in India. Because the Indus flows into modern day Pakistan, the Brahmaputra flows into China, from China and Tibet as well, into Bangladesh and so on. It's the largest west flowing river. It's 1312 kilometers long. and its source is the Narmada Kund in the Amarkantak Plateau. It's also known as Reva because she leaps through the rocky bed. She's known also as Purva Ganga. She's known as Shankari, meaning the daughter of Shankar or Lord Shiva. Traditionally, she forms the border between North and South India. She flows from the Amarkantak Hills in Central India and meets the Arabian Sea at the Gulf of Khambhat. So this is the course of the river. There are some west-flowing rivers in the peninsular area. Actually, the Deccan Plateau of the whole peninsular India, it slopes from the west to the east. So most of the rivers in peninsular India will also flow from the west to the east and empty out into the eastern sea, which is the Bay of Bengal. However, there are some rivers, like the Narmada, the Tapti, which don't flow exactly on the surface of the plateau, but they flow in certain ridge valleys that are inclined towards the western coast. So they flow in the opposite direction. And you have the very interesting case of the Godavari, which we just discussed, which starts from Brahmagiri, not too far from Narmada. And they flow almost parallelly for a pretty long distance. And both of them flow for a very long distance, and they flow in opposite directions. Very interesting. The Narmada flows westwards and the Godavari flows eastwards. So anyway, the Narmada is referred to, of course, in many of the Puranas. Very, very famous also. The place of origin is the Amarkantak Hills. It is also called the Riksha Parvat in the Puranas. Also called the Maikal Hills. So it flows in a narrow valley between the Vindhyar mountain range and the Satpura range. So that's how the valley, the ridge valley has been formed. The Narmada flows downwards towards that. This Amarkantak also is an interesting place. It is on the hills. It is said that there are 10 million holy places around this Amarkantak area. And the Narmada Kund is the place where the Narmada River originates, at Amarkantak. And there is a deity of goddess Narmada there. This is how she is depicted, as riding a crocodile. An interesting origin of the Narmada. And there is some mention of this in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 7 as well. There was a very ancient king called Mandhata. Now he had several sons. The most famous amongst his sons is King Ambarish. I'm sure you've all heard of Maharaj Ambarish, the one who had this pastime with Durvasa Muni. Yes? So Ambarish Maharaj was a great devotee of the Lord. And his brother was Purukutsa. One of his brothers was called Purukutsa. Now it so happened, according to the Puranas, including the Bhagavad Puran, the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the Gandharvas, one Purana says 60 million of them, they invaded Nagaloka, which is in the nether regions, the place of the Nagas, or the serpents. It's way into the oceans, an interesting connection to the mermaids that are known on different lands. The Nagas are like the mermaids, you know. The history or legends of mermaids are through everywhere. They have the body of a human and the torso of a serpent. And they are found many times here and there. Even in Europe, you have many legends of mermaids, yes? Because they're all there in the nether regions somewhere. Anyway, that's another topic. But so the Gandharvas invaded the Nagaloka and they conquered it and they took possession of their kingdom as well as the treasures. So the Nagas went for protection to Lord Vishnu. So Lord Vishnu told them, you go to this king Purukutsa and he will help you. So the Nagas asked their sister, whose name was Narmada, to go and ask King Purukutsa for help. So Purukutsa agreed, and Narmada led him. She flew and she led him to the Nagaloka. And there Purukutsa, being empowered by Lord Vishnu, was able to defeat all the Gandharvas. And the Nagas got their kingdom and their treasures back. And being grateful, the Nagas said that whoever hears this story of Narmada leading Purukutsa into Nagaloka need not ever fear the venom of snakes. So you're all free from snake bite now. No longer fear any snakes and snake bites. Interestingly, I should tell this to our devotees who live in farms and our farm projects and so on in India. So one can remember Narmada and become free from snake bite. So River Narmada, the etymology of the name, of course, is that it's very interesting. Narmadayini. Narma refers to happiness. Dayini means one who gives. So she is the bestower of transcendental happiness. The word Narma also means tenderness. And she is the one who gave tenderness to the heart of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, in other words, looked very affectionately upon her as a father would look upon the daughter. Also, another understanding of this term is that she gives a feeling of peace upon one who beholds her. So when you stand or sit and gaze at Narmada, immediately you feel a sense of peace dawning into your heart. Another meaning, it is said, is that she is a magnificent mother. Now, interestingly, this is the only river among all the major rivers of which pilgrims do an entire circumambulation or a parikrama. It's about 1,300 something kilometers long. So which means the entire circumambulation would be about 2,600 kilometers. So people do that. So they start from the origin, which is at Amarkantak. Where is that? Yeah. And they go all the way down, because you have to keep, whenever you circumambulate, you always keep the respectable entity you are circumambulating on your right. So you start the circumambulation. If you're going from the source to the mouth, then you will go on the southern side and you'll perform the parikrama like this. And you should never cross the river when you're performing the parikrama. Narmada parikrama is very famous. Many people do it. It takes months and sometimes years. And they may do it in installments also. So they come from the southern side. If you start from the mouth, from the source, you come here all the way to the place called Bharuch, which is a town in Gujarat. Then you go in the sea and then cross from the sea, come to the other side, the northern bank. And now you go up again all the way till Amarkantak, turn around, and that's your parikrama. Or you could start from the ocean, from the sea, then start from the northern banks, go along like this, come around and end here at the sea. So there are many people who do that. And there are numerous pilgrimage sites along the river, and we'll see some of them as we go on. So this is also an interesting thing, how people very faithfully do this parikrama, so we can understand how sacred this river is. And here's an interesting pastime of the origin of Lord Shiva. As he sat meditating one time, his intense concentration made him break into a sweat. As it rolled down, it got collected in a tank. Eventually, this overflowed as the Narmada or Shankari, Shankara's daughter. Now, a reminder, Lord Shiva's perspiration is not like ours. You know, his perspiration is transcendental. Lord Shiva's body is also transcendental. It's not ordinary. So this is very sacred. So it eventually got collected into this tank, it overflowed, and it became Shankari. Now, here's an interesting insight into how that place came to be known as Amarkantak. Now, this daughter of Shankari, because she was Shankara, Lord Shiva's daughter, she was exceptionally beautiful. So the demigods who had come there to witness this were struck with wonder to see the beauty of this damsel. And as is their wont, they started going after her. As sometimes this happens often or rather in the heavenly planets. Now she fled and she took the form of a river and she flowed very rapidly to meet the sea. And these demigods, they are called Amara. You know, one of the names for demigods is Amara. Amara literally means one who is beyond death. Mara means to die, A means not. Immortal. They're actually speaking not immortal. But in comparison to the lifetimes of human beings, their lifetimes are so humongous, so huge, that for humans they're as good as immortal. That is why the scriptures refer to them as Amara. So the demigods, sometimes called Amara. So these Amaras, so-called Amaras, were chasing Shankari, and there were the forest path full of thorns, Kantak. So they couldn't catch up with her, and all they ended up doing is having all these thorns in their feet. So therefore this place is called Amarkantak. So that's another interesting reason for the name. So Amarkantak, as I mentioned, is also a place that has many, many holy places there. And Dattatreya, the incarnation of the Lord, combined incarnation of Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh, he performed his penances here. And what is interesting also, it's mentioned here, every pebble on the riverbed is supposed to take the shape of a Shivalinga. And these are the pebbles that are found naturally on the riverbed. Now you may wonder why it's called a Banalinga. And the history goes back to a personality who is also described elaborately in the Srimad Bhagavatam. His name is Banasur. Banasur was the son of Bali Maharaj, who was the son of Virochan, who was the son of Prahlad Maharaj. So Banasur was a descendant of Prahlad, the great devotee. But nevertheless, Bana became an Asura. Therefore, he is called Banasura. Now, he was a great worshipper of Lord Shiva. So he came here to Amarkantak and he performed very severe austerities and he also worshipped millions of these Shivalingas. And therefore these Shivalingas are called Banalinga or Bana Shivalingas. And you will find that these self-manifested Shivalingas are worshipped everywhere, wherever in different temples in India you will find these Shivalingas here. Banasura's daughter Usha, she eventually married Aniruddha, who was the son of Pradyumna, who was the son of Krishna in Dwarka. So Banasura became a family member of Krishna's in this way. So anyway, this is regarding the origin of the Narmada in relation to Lord Shiva. But also there's another Puranic pastime about the origin of the Narmada, which is that Brahma one time shed two tears, one from two teardrops. One teardrop became the Narmada, feminine, and the other became the Son, male. Both became rivers. Another account is that a marriage was fixed between Son and Narmada. Now, there are various accounts in the different Puranas. Some say Son wooed her, some say he went to her father. In any case, the marriage was decided. As Son was approaching Amarkantak, where Narmada was, Narmada sent out her hairdresser Johila to check him out. Just see how he is. He's my groom. What does he look like? What is he? So Johila, she went there. It so happened that Son became enchanted with Johila instead. And Narmada understood this and she became furious. So she started flowing. She went away from Son in the opposite direction, and that is why she took a westward course to meet the sea. Meanwhile, being rejected and being very dejected, the Son then flew, or he moved in the opposite direction. And therefore, you see here, the river Son. No, I can't see. You see the Son here? It starts from very close to Amarkantak. This is Amarkantak where the Narmada starts. And from here, very close by, the Son River starts. He fled eastwards and joined the Ganga, became a very prominent tributary of the Ganga. So anyway, that's another pastime for the origin of the Ganga. And here's another one that's given in the Puranas. This was told by Markandeya Rishi to Yudhishthir Maharaj. When the Pandavas in exile came to the bank of the Narmada, they met Markandeya Rishi, who was performing penances there. And they asked him about the origin of the Narmada. And he narrated this pastime, that Pururava was asked by so many people to perform austerities and request Lord Shiva to bring Narmada down from the heavenly planets. I mentioned briefly the other day that some of these sacred rivers flow also in the higher planets of the universe. And then they are brought down by some transcendental arrangement. So just like Ganga and Yamuna were brought down, similarly Narmada was also brought down like that. So Shiva agreed to the proposal and he requested Narmada to come down to the earth. But she said, then who will bear the force of my flow? I need some mountain. And then Shiva came to the mountains and asked. And the conclusion, the consensus among the mountains was that Parayanka mountain, today known as the Maikal mountain, also known as the Amarkantak, would be the appropriate place for Narmada to descend. So she did. She flooded all the mountains and forests around, and everybody pleaded with her to not do that. Then she withdrew into her smaller form. She had to be restrained like that. And then she flowed towards the sea. So these are some of the Puranic accounts of the origin of the Yamuna, of the Narmada, I beg your pardon. So then from there, from Amarkantak, Narmada flows down via Jabalpur. Jabalpur is one of the big towns in that area. And this is the Kapila Dhara before that, a waterfall. And at Bhed Ghat in Jabalpur, this is Narmada. Actually, Banasur performed his austerities at Banasur Ghat. That same Banasur Ghat is today called Bhed Ghat. Okay, so it's the same place connected to Banasura. This is the Narmada flowing there. And here she flows in a gorge, through a gorge of marble rocks in Bhed Ghat. Now this place is famous for marble. Srila Prabhupada, in one of his morning walks, also happened to mention the famous marble near Jabalpur. And it is through these gorges that Narmada flows. Yes, the marble rocks alongside Narmada. Hey Narmade! Narmada! And then there's some more falls, Dhuadhar, because there's so much mist that comes up as the water falls. This is also there. So many beautiful waterfalls, and there is a thriving ecosystem here, a lot of biodiversity, many forms of animals, birds, plants, etc. are found here in this whole ecosystem. Again at Tilwara Ghat, here's a bird's eye view of the Narmada River. And there are many holy places along the way, like Omkareshwar. Here's another view at Omkareshwar. And the Narmada at Dhabri Kund. And then Maheshwar. Maheshwar is the ancient city known as Maheshmati that is mentioned in all the Puranas, including the Srimad Bhagavatam. And there are pastimes that have taken place here, which I'll briefly talk about in a moment. And this is also the place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited. After he visited the origin of the Godavari, he came up north a little more and visited the Maheshmati Pura. He took bath in the Tapti River that is a little south of Narmada. He also came to Narmada and took bath in the Narmada. And that's the Chaitanya Charitamrita verse. Tapi snana kori aila Maheshmati Pure, nana tirtha dekhi taha Narmadara tire. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took bath in the Tapti River, came to Maheshmati Pura, and he saw all the holy places around Maheshmati, and then he took bath in the Narmada River. So this was the place where Kartivir Arjuna, a great powerful king, who had 1,000 arms, he defeated Ravana. One time, to amuse his queens, he stopped the flow of the Narmada with his 1,000 hands. And so downstream, it was a dry riverbed because the flow had been stopped. So Ravana came there later, not knowing what was happening upstream. And he started doing his Shiva Puja and all his paraphernalia there. And once the amusements of the queens of Kartivir Arjuna were over, so he let go and the water flowed and washed away all the puja paraphernalia of Ravana, who was enraged. And he came upstream to look at who was responsible. And he attacked Kartivir Arjuna, but Kartivir easily subdued him and defeated him, humiliated him actually. And then on his 10 heads he placed 10 lamps, one lamp each and one on his hand. So today there is a temple of Kartivir Arjuna with 11 lamps there. And but finally, Kartivir Arjuna was proud. He went one time to the ashram of Jamadagni Rishi, who offered great hospitality. And in return, he kidnapped the cow, the wish-fulfilling cow, Kamadhenu of the sage. When Parshuram, the son of Jamadagni, came and he heard about this, he was infuriated. He came to Maheshmati Puri, right here on the banks of the Narmada, and he killed Kartivir Arjuna. And from there, he went on a campaign to kill the Kshatriyas 21 times over. So that began here. This shows Parshuram killing Kartivir Arjuna. So coming now to more sober matters. Many people bathe in the Narmada. It's a very, very holy place. And even the Ganga, it is said in the Puranas, or one folklore says that she comes as a black cow to purify herself by bathing in the Yamuna. Lord Ram came here, and Bhrigu Rishi came here, Kapila Dev came here, Markandeya Rishi came here, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here. And you see the Narmada Aarti, just like you have Ganga Aarti, Yamuna Aarti, they have Aarti of the Narmada at Jabalpur. It's a very beautiful sight, these Aartis of the holy rivers. Bhrigu Rishi at the mouth, the confluence of the river with the sea. There is a temple where Bhrigu Rishi presides, and this is his deity. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. So now the Narmada meets the sea, and thus she continues to flow to bestow her blessings upon us. Unfortunately, I have not been able to talk about Sindhu and Kaveri and many other rivers like the Krishna, the Brahmaputra, and other rivers. But at least we were able to cover these 5 rivers. Gange cha Yamune chaiva Godavari Saraswati Narmade Sindhu Kaveri Jalesmin Sannidhim Kuru. Thank you very much. Shri Shri Radha Gokulanand ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.